Picture a time 18,000 years ago when mammoths roamed a grassy plain connecting Alaska with Asia, a time when the global sea level was low and the shallow continental shelf that lies in the area of the Chukchi and Bering Seas exposed dry land. The Bering Land Bridge that in effect made Alaska an extension of Asia during the Ice Age. So during Pleistocene times, Alaska occupied a critical geographic position in relationship to the rest of the New World. Archaeologists, including Dr. E. James Dixon, curator and assistant professor of archaeology at the University of Alaska Museum in Fairbanks, have been working on data that will provide further information regarding that critical position. Information concerning the antiquity of both animal and human inhabitation of interior Alaska. Data which may show that people inhabited this state as long as 20,000 years ago. According to Dixon, the hill on which the University of Alaska is located is a key site historically in providing this information.
Alaska's role in the population of the New World has largely been interpreted through interior Alaska, where the university has been located, and consequently a lot of the research is focused or radiated out from the university. In 1935, N.C. Nelson published the first report of an archaeological site located right here on the University of Alaska campus called a campus site. And artifactual remains from that site are very closely related technologically to artifacts discovered in Asia. And consequently, Nelson demonstrated the first reasonable evidence that peoples of Alaska and peoples of Asia shared a common origin.
The material remains undated, and the site has been continually disturbed. It is now covered by a parking lot and an administration building. However, similar sites from interior Alaska indicate that the site may be at least 11,000 years old, belonging to a technological group referred to as the Denali Complex.
The village site at Healy Lake, the Donnelly Ridge site down near Delta, Dry Creek site near Healy, and another site called Moose Creek, which is a tributary to the Nenana River, have been dated, and it appears that the artifacts from the campus site are what archaeologists call, are representative of a tradition that that archaeologists call the Denali Complex.
The characteristic elements include microblades, parallel-sided thin stone flakes set in the side of bone and antler projectile points, and burins, stone tools for working bone, antler, and ivory. Although these implements appear in interior Alaska 11,600 years before the present, new data indicates that interior Alaska may have been inhabited 100 years or so before that.
And there's very little evidence in relationship to lifestyles. However, I think it's just a matter of time until some habitation locales actually are noted. I think that we can say with a great deal of certainty that the people in this region were hunters and gatherers, essentially hunting the local fauna, and by process of elimination, that has to be a few of the known species that existed during that time. When we get back to a period of, let's say, 11, 12,000 years ago, we're not sure just what the faunal array was like. We can say, I think, from Dry Creek that bison were hunted, probably elk. From various other sites, it appears that possibly bear and some small game.
According to Dixon, there is a great deal of research and analysis in progress relating to the early inhabitants of the interior and Alaska in general.
Right now, the research effort focused toward early man in Alaska in general, and specifically interior Alaska, is going full force. There's a number of projects underway, and we've just come back from the field this summer. We've got a number of sites that we've we knew about before, and we've excavated more of. We've also discovered new sites that we're waiting the radiocarbon dates. We don't know how old they are, and it's very difficult to give a very factual explanation at this point in time because the analysis is far from complete. Plus, there's a number of researchers that are working on different problems, different aspects, and different regions, and they haven't gotten together yet to exchange their information. Mm-hmm. So this is largely rumor mill that we're repeating here. There's a lot to lead us to believe that man was in interior Alaska possibly 20,000 years ago. However, we're trying to prove that, and it's very hard to do based on the the limited resources we have.
As results come in and researchers determine the significance of their findings, information will be released to news media, to academic journals, and in archaeologist Dixon's case, to National Geographic.
In my particular case, a good deal of our funding is from the National Geographic Society, who will probably publish a popular article dealing with the material, which of course would get national and international distribution.
So in the future, readers of National Geographic can expect articles not only on killer sharks, Andean Indians, and Afghani camels, but 18,000-year-old mammoths and the story of early man and woman in the 49th state. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. Judging from the parking lot filled with pickup trucks with dog boxes on the back, one would have thought the event was an indoor dog sled race, the first of its kind. But it wasn't. It was a movie premiere for Spirit of the Wind, a film that is among the first of its kind. If the film were about horses, it might be called a horse opera. We've all seen plenty of those. But this film is about dogs, so maybe it's a dog opera. It's not a Benji-style dog opera, but a production that more resembles a Greek play. The story is about the years between 1947 and 1958 in the life of, quote, the winningest dog musher of all time, George Atla, who is often called the Huslia Hustler. As in any Greek tragedy, there is a hero with a tragic flaw. In this case, the tuberculosis that caused the young boy to leave his home in the village of Huslia and live in the Mount Edgecombe Hospital for several years. He returned home in 1955, his right knee fused by an operation, his stomach no longer prepared for beaver tail, and talking of baseball and gorillas, both unfamiliar to his people. He had also acquired another aspect of the hero, hubris or overweening pride. He wanted dogs and to race them, but didn't always show the patience required. One scene shows him listening to the World Series on radio rather than going out caribou hunting, an act incomprehensible to his father. The moral to any Greek tragedy is ta pathemata mathemata, the suffered is the learned, and the movie follows Atla as he goes into Anchorage and on to win his first big race, the 1958 World Championship Fur Rendezvous Sled Dog Race in Anchorage. He suffered, overcoming both physical affliction and hubris, to learn about dogs and to subsequently nose out defending champion Gareth Wright for that win and later many others. Though most people in the audience at last week's Fairbanks premiere knew the outcome of the race, the tension of anticipation was apparent. The easy-paced film shows many scenes of village life. The scenery, the action, and the acting are all quite wonderful and probably do more to promote the state than any D2 film or record that's been released. And this, more or less, is real life. It doesn't matter that there are no mosquitoes or gnats in fish camp, or that the Anchorage race and surrounding scenes were shot in Ely, Minnesota, Fairbanks, and Anchorage, or that Huslia was shot in Rampart, Tanana, and Fort Yukon. A mechanic from Holy Cross who had never driven dogs plays George, and George's real-life sister plays his mother in the film. With eyes like hers, it doesn't matter. As Ralph Little, a former documentary filmmaker from Juneau, who served as the film's producer-director, notes,
The settings, you know, are really remarkable, and for most people to see a movie that's all set in interior Alaska is wonderful, and then you've got the dog racing, which nobody's ever seen, and which I think is wonderfully visual. And so I just thought it'd make a great subject, and I think it did. I think that the film really turned out better than anybody connected with it would ever have guessed. I think the acting is astounding, really. And the authenticity and the feel of the film is very authentic. And I think it was that sort of cultural authenticity that really was the reason that they were so fond of the film in France.
The film was one of five American films shown at the 1979 Cannes Film Festival. Once Little conceived of the idea and had Atla's approval to proceed, he approached Doyon Limited, the native regional profit corporation, for financing. According to Little, their main interest was cultural, not financial.
I think they really wanted a story about one of their people who, you know, rose up and really sort of had heroic stature, and I really think George has that, and I think the film shows that.
The film, about 3.5 years in the making, cost approximately $650,000, a very small budget for a feature film, even with transportation to Cannes thrown in. A small crew and profit sharing enabled Little to keep costs down without, according to him, jeopardizing quality. How did George Atla feel when he was approached by someone wanting to do a film based on his life?
Well, I'm just like the average person. I want to know how much money there is in it.
What's it like to watch somebody else play you on the screen?
It's really no problem, because I never really thought of it that way. I mean, you know, if somebody's playing you, there is no such thing. They might play you on a screen, but actually, you know, you don't think of it that way, I don't think. I mean, at least I don't, you know. I never at one time thought I was Pies, you know.
Atla helped in casting the film and with the dogs. He feels that everyone involved with the film felt at home, and that's what's contributing to the film's success. Pius Savage from Holy Cross, who plays the adult George Atla in the movie, had never acted before, but that didn't bother him. It was easy, he says, because, quote, the lifestyle was similar to what I grew up in. He'd seen George race, but didn't know him, and hadn't run dogs. But his explanation of how he acted angry sounds straight out of acting school.
I build it up, you know, to get mad. You got to build up 20, 30 minutes before the scene. I mean, you read about it and what you got to say, and then you remember back that time you were mad, you know. And then when he says action, it's from there, it's all there, you know.
He hopes to do more acting, and Little feels he has a good future, though for now he feels the film hasn't affected his life. William Ambrose from Galena portrays Atla as a boy. He was selected from school because...
I guess they thought I was a nice boy for the part, so they sent for me from Fairbanks to do a screen test.
Like most of the others involved in the film, with the notable exception of Slim Pickens, Chief Dan George, and George Clutesi, Ambrose hadn't acted before either, with the exception of a couple of school plays. But he says it was easy and, quote, felt pretty neat. Doyon Limited is also enthusiastic about the film. Doyon will make 50% of the profits after recouping their initial investment. Initially, though, they figured that even if the film broke even, it was worth backing. Tim Wallace is president of Doyon Limited.
If it didn't become a commercial film, maybe it would evolve into a documentary and could be sold to the television networks and could be sold at a break-even point. And so with that in mind, we decided to make the movie, and we're, you know, just happy it turned out the way it did.
It seems lots of people are happy the film, Spirit of the Wind, turned out the way it did. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. The date for the first race of the Fairbanks Dog Mushers Association's 1979-1980 season has been set for December 16th. There will be both seven dog and open classes, with the seven doggers going 8 miles and the open mushers racing for 10. The first freight race won't be until December 30th. That'll be an 8-mile event with each dog required to pull 50 pounds of load. The North American Championship races, one of the premier dog racing events, will be held as usual in March. The Junior North American, 7-dog, and freight races will be run March 7th, 8th, and 9th, while the open class runs March 14th, 15th, and 16th. There's enough snow on the ground now for training dogs, though some local mushers have been using carts and stripped car bodies to keep their dogs toughened up over the snowless season. Snow over the weekend was pretty wet and mucky, but cooler temperatures should make for ideal conditions for dogs and drivers within the next few days. George Atla reports that he hopes to start training this week, and his rival Gareth Wright has been training for some time. He's got a lot of pups in his lot that need attention, and the older dogs, those 2 and 3 years old, are ready for some long-distance toughening up. It was back in 1958 that George Atla, in his first Anchorage for a Rendezvous World Championship race, barely edged out the 1957 champion, Gareth Wright, for his first big win, the start of a long series. But it isn't only the big-name mushers who are happy about the snow and preparing for the racing season. Dogs and mushers alike are howling all over the frosty woods these days. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. Senator Mike Gravel, chairman of the Environmental and Public Works Subcommittee, is expected to offer an amendment tomorrow to S-713, the Omnibus Water Resources Bill. That amendment will stipulate that the Army Corps of Engineers will be held liable for 5 years after the completion of the Chena River Flood Control Project. Critics of the project, which would divert the Tanana River to prevent further erosion to the riverbank near the airport, are concerned about possible adverse effects. These include lowering of the water level in the Chena River to a level impossible for navigation, flooding of the Rosie Creek area, and possible loss of a prime fisheries area in the upper Chena due to the inability of the grayling to get through mudflats at the mouth. The problem stems from the damming effect of the Tanana on the Chena River. If the Tanana is diverted away from the mouth, many people believe that the negative effects will outweigh any benefits. Even the Army Corps of Engineers admits there is a possibility of future extensive damages. The Fairbanks North Star Borough is particularly concerned because an agreement signed with the Corps in 1971 stipulates that upon completion of the project, the Corps is not liable for any damages. That responsibility falls to the state and the borough. The borough wants the project completed, and attorneys for the borough have suggested that the Corps be on site to watch and take any necessary remedial action if the water level drops. Gravel's proposal for a 5-year liability period for the Corps of Engineers is unprecedented. It's never been done successfully before. However, given his chairmanship of the subcommittee, the Corps' own acknowledgement of potential damage, and the fact that Gravel is not proposing an in-perpetuity maintenance program, but one of finite duration, the senator is confident the amendment will be adopted. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. If you were going to a costume party dressed as Alaska, how would you look?
A long formal and bunny boots.
Frozen. Like a polar bear.
Grubby. What would you wear?
Dirty t-shirt and old jeans.
Covered with spindly trees.
Just be me. That's Alaska.
Oh, I go as a Fairbanks, your typical Fairbanks man. I'd wear, have an uncut beard and scruffy clothes and look like a general Fairbanks hippie.
Let's see. Look like Alaska, I think I'd go as a piece of sh** stuck on the bottom of a Teamster's boot.
I think I would probably go naked as a big frostbite.
I take off all my clothes and back in as a Parker House roll.
You think that that Parker House rolls are typify Alaska?
Yes, imported technology.
Frozen.
How would you show frozenness?
Probably with a map of the land.
Wrapped around your body?
That's correct.
There's so many things you could look like or not look like. Alaska is a land of paradox. I would look like a pair of docks.
And how would you do that?
Well, wood and barnacles, rope perhaps to tie things on with.
Mm. Would you have any sound effects that went with this?
Well, sound effects would be probably the most important thing. Water, dogs howling.
How would you do that? Would you bring a tape recorder or make them yourself?
I think it might be more authentic to try to make them myself. I particularly like howling, so that'd be a good excuse for
that.
Could you howl?
Could I? Oh, I'd love to.
Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.